ComicTheBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, August 28th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to cover all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me on the eve of week one here. We've got two great guests joining me on today's program. The first, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat about his college football season preparations, the stats that he uses to evaluate and put together a profile for these teams. Then we'll take a look at the MAC and some of the MAC games for week one. Second half of today's show, Wes Reynolds will join me at Wes Reynolds with the number one on Twitter. You can hear his work on VSiN these days. Wes going to chat with us here about week four of the NFL preseason, the Andrew Luck situation with the Colts, the fallout with that, and then also derivative betting for week one, where there should be a whole lot of opportunities out there with some of these non-conference games. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff over there from our very talented cast of writers. We've got you covered all over the place for week one of the college football season. We also have a lot of NFL thoughts for you, including overviews of Danny Borg's model and his home field advantage calculations. 58% over the last 2 years on both sides and totals for Danny Borg's over at the website, so make sure that you're checking his work out on a daily basis. No golf this week, at least not PGA Tour-wise, so no preview for that, but we do have NASCAR coming up here for this weekend. We'll chat some UFC with Christian Pina on Friday's show, and he'll have a preview for us over at the website as well. WNBA, we're going to start getting NHL coverage from Parker Michaels. Things are very, very busy right now over at bangthebook.com. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We start things off with professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hey, everything's going great. Excited for football. Doing a live betting show three nights a week in baseball, and that's been a lot of fun. It's just a terrific time of action right now. Excited. I know you've got your hockey guy coming on soon, and he's been very good in hockey. I can't wait for hockey season. It's a great time to be a sports bettor.
Yes, sir. Most definitely is. And I guess before we chat some football stuff, I threw in the towel, man. I waved the white flag with baseball. It was a very challenging season for me, one of the worst that I've had in my career here in the business. And, you know, I don't know. I guess the tried and true methods that I have just didn't work out. Maybe I just fell on the wrong side of variance, something like that. But how's your baseball season been going?
You know, it's funny. Last year, I just had a tremendous season. And I started back this year doing the same thing. Last year, I played a lot of underdogs. I was mostly an underdog player. I think my average lay price on the season might have been like even money or so. The baseball has changed, especially in the second half of the season. The second half of the season, I've known all along that underdogs don't win nearly as much as they do during the first half of the season. And I noticed that this year. I think a lot of it has to do with going back to the Houston Astros, where, you know, they're not going to say it, but they were basically tanking to build up their minor leagues. Now you're seeing a lot of teams doing it. So you find teams halfway through the season have given up on the year. Your Kansas City's, your Baltimore's, those type of things, your Miami's. You just can't bet them, even though they're such a good value sometimes. They seem to be. They just can't win the games. And I noticed that early, and I switched over and started playing more favorites. About halfway through the season, I was basically even for the entire season. And then lately, I've been hot. I'm our winningest handicapper in the month of August. Winningest handicapper at Wager Talk for the last 3 years in baseball. It's all come back together. I've got a big 5% play going today in Major League Baseball over at Wager Talk, and I don't have many of those, 24-8 on the season. Yeah, it's been very good as of late. Once I decided, you know what, favorites are the way to go this baseball season the way it is. And, in fact, yesterday I had a slight favorite on the Twins. I win, and I had the underdog on Texas and lose. And And that's the way it's been, is my underdogs just haven't come through, although I did have, I believe, a 170 dog the other day on Seattle. But for the most part, favorites have been the way to go this year. And I think I was a little behind the curve, but I was able to recoup some difference earlier on in the season. And now I'm just riding these favorites, and it's working out very well.
Yeah, no, this is something I talked about over the summer on the bettors box, at least in terms of minus 180 or higher favorites, which, you know, are obviously a tough sell when you've got clients. But over the last 5 years, that's been extremely profitable. And, you know, there is a pretty big gap here between the teams that are very good, the teams that are very bad, and the teams that are in the middle are very inconsistent. And I think that was my problem this season, was I was playing too many of the shorter priced favorites with the inconsistent teams, the quasi contenders, the, you know, teams that are a step below the wild card leaders. That I think was my problem. You know, I wasn't playing enough trustworthy teams. I think that's really important in Major League Baseball these days, because you look league wide, bullpens aren't nearly as good. A lot of games becoming home run derbies. I think you really do have to isolate those teams that you can trust day in and day out. And that felt like an area where I fell short.
Yeah, I've actually changed what I do for starting pitchers. In the past, I didn't really pay much of attention to how many home runs a game they would allow. Well, this year, because of the juice ball, the home runs obviously are making a big difference. In fact, two of the leaders in home runs this year are Verlander and Cole, two of the guys that are up for the Cy Young, because when you get a hit off of them, you're just swinging as hard as you can. You just happen to hit the ball over the fence. And so both those guys have given up a lot of home runs this year, even though they're great pitchers and they're up for the Cy Young Award. I've gone through all the pitchers that I use, and I've seen some difference. Some guys would have – basically, they give up a home run every eight innings, seven innings or something the last couple of years. Now they've given up three home runs every nine innings. So the ball has made a difference. Those are the guys that I'm trying to avoid. You've got certain pitchers out there that the only way they're getting beat is by the home run. And that's something that I'm trying to avoid. So it's something that I have learned. And you can definitely tell, if you look at what they've done the last few years, you could tell who is really struggling with this new ball they're using this year. And those are the ones where if you're going to give up two home runs a game, I don't want to back you no matter what your ERA is, because you get a couple guys on for either of those, and you've got a favorite that you're laying big money on, and you're going to give up, you know, five runs there just from two swings of the bat. I don't want any part of that. And it's interesting because the Indians got a pitcher tonight. He's gone 25 innings. He still hasn't given up a home run. And he's got a 1-3 record, which really cracks me up. But that's the way baseball is.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, hey, at least someone out there is still having success with the baseball season. So check out Brian's work over at wagertalk.com, including that big play that he's got up there on the board for tonight. But, Brian, I was looking back through. I mean, I didn't realize that you and I didn't talk over the summer here on the show. So we got some things to catch up with in that regard. And I guess the first place to start here, we do have a couple of games in the books already, at least as far as FBS goes. But your season preparations here, I mean, what's the process look like for you? What are you doing to get ready for the year?
Well, I'm not as dedicated in the summer as Ralph Michaels and Brad Powers are, but since they live here in Vegas and I am able to throw some ideas up against them, and I am sort of able to pick their brains a little bit early on. But yeah, since baseball has been so good to me the last few years, I haven't had the time to get started as early. But I'll tell you, this year I've gotten started earlier than I've ever done in football. And some of the things that I didn't give enough credit to in the past that I have this year, one of them is recruiting, another is coaching. And that's something that I've lacked in the past. You're always trying to learn. I mean, I've been doing this for close to 40 years now. You're always trying to get better each and every season. And so I've incorporated some more information into, you know, I don't have a model, but I have some certain things that I look at each and every week. And a couple of them are looking at the grading of the talent on these teams and then how the coaches have done and what they've done with that talent. I did a video at Wager Talk yesterday. I talked about how just this week on Thursday, Cincinnati and the UCLA. UCLA has got far better talent, but it seems to be the teams in the Pac-12, I don't know if it's the coaching or if they're just not getting enough out of their players. They recruit well, but they can't win games like they do in the SEC and in the Big Ten. And so you get great players to go out there to the Pac-12, but they're just not turning into better players as their college careers go on. And that's one of the things for UCLA. They've got a far better talent than Cincinnati does on Thursday. But the Cincinnati coaching, I'm a big believer in the Cincinnati coaching. And, you know, I kind of like the Bearcats this Thursday. I'm glad somebody hit it down below the three. Don't know if I'm going to use it as a play. That's one of my borderline plays. But it's something that I haven't looked at in the past that I need to spend more time on. And I think it's really going to affect us this year and really going to help us.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, too. We've kind of talked about this a little bit in previous seasons, and I think we really harped on it last year. You know, when we were doing the preseason prep shows and all that kind of thing, it feels like the talent pool is maybe more dispersed than ever. You know, you've got four-star kids willing to stay closer to home and play in the Sun Belt or, you know, Conference USA, AAC, something like that. Yeah, they don't get a lot of them, you know, certainly relative to the Power Five schools. But even lower Power 5 schools, you look at a guy like Rondale Moore at Purdue, for example, you know, even some of the lower Power 5s getting that high 3-star, mid to low 4-star type of talent, and that's just it, man. It's all about how you maximize that talent in college football, you know, because you can take a 2-star guy, turn him into a first-round NFL pick if you know how to use that skill set, if you put a guy in a position to succeed. How many 5-stars do we see that, you know, either don't play or wind up transferring a couple times or something like that, where they have the talent and then they have to go the JUCO route for a year or, you know, something like that. So that is really important to look at in college football coaching. And that also goes down to a coordinator level as well.
It definitely does. And you were touching on the Big Ten a little bit. I just look at the back end of the Big Ten. We've got Northwestern. I got ranked 52nd in talent. I've got Indiana 50th, Illinois 58th, Rutgers 62nd, and Purdue 56th. But the only team that's ever any good out of those, you know, each team has had one or two years that they're pretty good, but Northwestern. I mean, Northwestern's coaching staff is one of the best at bringing out the players they get. They're 50th in recruiting, but yet at the end of the season, Northwestern is always going to a bowl. They're knocking somebody off. Sometimes they got a chance to play for the conference championship. I mean, this is a team, based on the coaching, they get the best out of their players. Then you've got other teams. You know, you look at, you know, teams like, you know, in college football that recruit well, but they just don't seem to get a lot out of it. Take a look at USC. I know Phil Steele, you know, you take a look at his book every year, and he does grade a lot based on talent. But in my estimation, he doesn't give enough credit to the coaching. And USC is always top 10 in recruiting each and every year. I've got them number 5 right now in all of college football, but I've got their coaches rated poorly for the most part. And that's something that, you know, my power ratings are saying they're probably the third to fifth best team in the league, but yet they're the best recruiting team by a mile in that conference. And you've got to have the coaching to go along with the recruiting. And some guys are great recruiters. We look at that in North Carolina this year, a great recruiter. I don't know what kind of coach he is anymore, but Mac Brown is one of those guys I'll be keeping an eye on this year. And, you know, he had a 26th recruiting talent, which isn't bad at all. It's not Florida State's 6th or Clemson, but we'll see how they do. But I think he's a great recruiter. He just is not that great of a coach. And we'll see how it goes for North Carolina.
No, I guess my follow-up question here would be, you know, in terms of quantifying coaches and what their impact is, I mean, are you just incorporating them into your power rating setup, or is it a situation where, let's say you've got a game, you know, maybe lined right at -7, that's where the market is, but you notice a big coaching mismatch relative to the research that you've done, even though you're right on the number, will you still play it with that big power or with that big coaching mismatch, or is it just part of the power ratings that you factor into the equation?
Yeah, it's not part of the power ratings. The power ratings are the talent and what the team has done. But I also look at the coaching, and it's something I hadn't done in the past. I've gone through, for example, last year I went through every team, how they did straight up in games that are 7 or less points final score. And most of them average out each and every year. But you have starting coaches. You take a look at, like, Ohio State and Clemson were two that really jumped out at me. You go back years and years, and Ohio State and Clemson, you would think it would reverse to the mean a little bit, revert to the mean. But Ohio State and Clemson continue to win these close ball games. Now, part of it is they've got great talent, but they just don't lose it. And there's other teams that just 1 year they'll go 4-1 in those close games. The next year they'll go 0-4. And you see a lot of regression. That's one of the things I look at for season wins, that kind of thing. And most of your coaches will regress to the mean, but some coaches out there just get more out of their talent each and every year. And you know, I talked about Northwestern. Northwestern is one of those teams that if it's a close game, I want Northwestern. You can see by Northwestern over the years being an underdog how well they do. And, you know, they start the losing off catching 6 points at Stanford, you know, just blindly. I'm looking at that, and even though I like the Stanford coach, Northwestern's been very good in that dog role, and that's something I'll take a look at. I haven't made a decision on the game, but that's you know, if the coach has not done well with what he has, it's a deal breaker, even though the line may say that I have a little bit of an advantage there.
So as we transition to talk about the MAC a little bit here, because I definitely want to get your thoughts on the conference, and we'll talk about a few of these week one matchups here. As far as the coaching stacks up in the MAC, I mean, are there some guys that stand out over others?
Well, obviously Ohio's got the best coach in the MAC. He's been there for a long time. Toledo usually has pretty good coaches. Western Michigan's good coaching. Northern Illinois has had probably, in my regard, either first or second. We'll see what happens this year. I don't know what they're trying to do at Northern Illinois is going to work there. But now you get down to the bottom of the league, and you've got your Bowling Greens, your Akron's, your Kent's. Kent's coach isn't bad now, but a lot of these teams really have poor coaches over the years, Akron and Bowling Green especially. And when you have bad coaching and you're recruiting the lower class of recruits, I mean, I take a look at the MAC right now this year. For recruiting, I've got Toledo ranked 74, Western Michigan 75, Miami 95. Everybody else is in the hundreds, including Eastern Michigan at 124 and Akron 129, Buffalo 121. So Buffalo, at least they're solid on the lines this year. They could probably get the best line play in the league, even though they've lost some key players in the offseason. So I don't see that much of a drop-off coming from Buffalo. But they didn't recruit very well. And it's something you got to take a look at. Your teams that recruit very well in that league, your Western Michigans, your Toledos, those are the teams that are there every single year. And those are the teams that have the, you know, they got the better players. And sometimes without the greatest coaching, they can have success. But it just so happens that I like the coaches of those two schools.
Now, as I look at the MAC here personally in my power ratings, the top team I have is Ohio, but they're ranked 76th in my power ratings here this season. I typically wind up with, you know, my top MAC team maybe in the mid to lower 60s, something like that. So it feels like to me the conference as a whole is down a little bit this year. Is that the same assessment that you came to?
Yes, exactly. I have Ohio rated the highest. I've got Western Michigan right behind them along with Toledo. Northern Illinois dropped a little bit, but they're probably next in line. But, I think the MAC is down, especially when you take a look at these games, the non-conference games. The MAC has always done very poorly in these. If I see a MAC team that's favored over a Sunbelt team, and it's not one of the top three in the league, chances are I'll be taking the money line on that Sunbelt team. And that's just the way the MAC is the MAC gets those chances to play the big schools, and they just don't have the depth to be able to do it. Their starters aren't bad, but those teams just don't have the depth. And when you're playing, you know, like, for example, usually a Wisconsin or one of those power teams play a MAC team, and they're just going to run the ball down your throat. As the game gets on and on, you're changing people on defense to try to put fresh people in there, and you just don't have the talent. And, you know, that's something I always look at is when a team with a power running game like that plays one of these weaker teams in the non-conference. I look to be playing on the power running team because they just have the ability just wear them out as the game goes on. And so for the Sun Belt and the MAC, they just don't have the depth. Pretty good starters on most of these teams that could compete early on. But as the game goes on, and especially early in the season, when you've got some hot weather, it definitely takes a toll on some of these teams.
All right, well, let's talk about one of those games here in particular. Game 141-142 on Thursday night. Kent State takes on Arizona State. First of all, before we talk about this game specifically here, Arizona State 24.5-point favorite, I've heard some difference of opinion on Kent State. So I want to hear Brian Leonard's take on this team. Are you a fan of Sean Lewis here in year two? Do you like the direction of this program?
You know, I don't, and I guess I'm in the minority. I'm with you, it sounds like. But some of the people I've talked to like this Kent team. They think they're on the up-and-comer list. But I've got them rated about the same as Central Michigan, which I don't think much of. I've got them a little bit better than Bowling Green and Akron. But they still need to prove it to me at Kent. And maybe it's past history that I keep going back to because I know how bad Kent has been for the most part over the years. I'm not sold on the coaching staff there. I think we'll find out a little bit this first game. I don't know if we'll find out a lot. This is one of the situations, although Arizona State isn't one of those teams that may overpower you. The heat could be a definite factor later on in that game when Kent goes there this weekend. So Arizona State's one of those teams that really surprised me last year. I mean, everybody I knew basically thought Arizona State was going to have a little bit of a regression with the coach coming in who hadn't coached college football, hadn't even been on the sideline for a while. But they ended up having a pretty decent season. I've got them in the lower half of the Pac-12. I like the defensive coordinator at Arizona State. At Kent State, it's either not enough information for me or I don't think very highly of them. Kent may hang in there for a little bit in the first half. I think Arizona State will pull away, but it's probably not going to be on my card this weekend.
Well, that was something I wanted to ask you about here with these non-conference games. And this is something I talked about yesterday with Rolf Michaels later on in the program, is that, look, you know, in the early going for these games, you know, you would think that the better team would usually start faster. I mean, they should just be more polished. Usually there's less turnover with the Power Five types of teams. The group of five, you wind up with different coaches. You wind up with, you know, maybe a really good three-star recruit moving on, and he was your best player, stuff like that. So you could make a case for playing these bigger favorites just in the first half, thinking that maybe in the second half they kind of take their foot off the gas a little bit, put it in cruise control. But on the other hand, as you and I know from a baseball standpoint, over a larger sample size, the better team is going to be the better team on each individual play. So as the game goes along, that team's just going to be better. So with some of these MAC teams that are going to be overmatched in weeks 1 through 3, are you looking to maybe play some first halves to fade them, or are you maybe looking more at the full game because, you know, as you mentioned, depth is always an issue for these teams, and there could be some weather factors as well?
Yeah, a lot of that, I think, comes down to what the schedule looks like. Do the better teams have a conference game coming up, or, you know, a game against a team that's higher ranked than them, where they could lose a little interest and start clearing the bench a little bit sooner? It all depends on each and every game. I take every game totally different. And, you know, there's certain teams that perform well in the first half, and then they just fade as the game goes on. I've heard certain coaches that have talked about coming into these games, especially if they're from some of these smaller conferences, that their goal is to win the conference and compete in the conference, where you've got other coaches, and Northern Illinois has always been one of these, to go out and they want to pull these upsets. And when they get a chance to play the bigger teams with the coaching change, we'll see how that goes. But every team has a goal. Some coaches have come out and said, you know what, we're going to be as vanilla as we can in these early non-conference games where they're just for a paycheck. We don't want anybody to get hurt. And those are the coaches that obviously you're going to want to bet against as the non-conference season goes along. But everybody's got different priorities in these games. And I think you can look back at what they've done in prior seasons. The problem you run into with college coaching is they make the changes in coaching staffs so often, it's hard to get a sample size that's worth looking at. You could take a look at, you know, in the big, when you've got really good teams, you rarely make coaching changes, and those teams have a lot of stability. So you can go back and look at Ohio State. You know, obviously, they made the coaching change this year, but you can go back and take a look at that. You can take a look at Alabama, you know, Michigan State, the teams that have had the coaches for multiple years, and see how they treat these non-conference games, and what are they trying to prove, and what do they do if they've got a conference game next up. But it's tougher to do in these smaller conferences that seem to change coaches. The Sun Belt, of course, Sun Belt changes coaches more than people change underwear. I mean, it's ridiculous how some of these guys go. And so you don't, it's, you go in blind, and I don't like going in blind. I like going in knowing what to expect out of these coaches. And, you know, if you can't get certain coaches to tell you what they're going to look at or how they're going to treat them, you really got to let a game go by before you can see what their game plans are in these.
All right, so we move ahead to Saturday here. We touch on game 171-172, Toledo taking on Kentucky. Kentucky, I'd say the consensus number out there is minus 12 for this game. Toledo's an interesting team, and it sounds like you and I are both a little bit lower on them this season than we have been in previous seasons. The further they get away from Matt Campbell's tenure, the more you kind of worry about what's going on up there with Jason Candle. They've lost some guys to the NFL over the last few seasons as well. But they take in a Kentucky team that lost a lot of talent to the NFL last year. And Kentucky, you know, despite being an SEC team, doesn't recruit a whole lot of NFL caliber talent usually. So both of these teams down a little bit here heading into the year.
Yeah, I've got Kentucky from a talent rating of 31st, where I've got Toledo at 74. Kentucky 31's actually been pretty good. They've recruited pretty well the last few years, although I'm not a big fan of the head coach. I like the offensive coordinator there, not much on the defense. I actually don't have a problem with any of the Toledo coaching staff. They're not what they've had in the past. But still, when you take a look at what's going on in the MAC, it's tougher to hold on to a quality coach in the MAC than it is anywhere else, because they're always looking for upper movement. But, yeah, some money's come in on Toledo. I think it's more of a fade of Kentucky. Last year they relied so much on that power running game. And it's interesting because some of the quotes I've heard from the NFL is he hasn't been that impressive. And he's the one that I can't think of the name offhand of the power running guy that got drafted in the NFL.
Benny Snell.
Yeah, that's it, Benny Snell. They relied on him so much last year. And they don't have him this year. Do they have somebody else to take his place? I don't know. It's not very often that Kentucky is getting players drafted into the NFL, as you pointed out. Money's coming in a little bit on Toledo here. I guess I would lean Toledo, but I was really hoping to get a higher number than what they've had. I want to fade Kentucky, but I don't know if this is the game I want to do with it.
Oh, and it's interesting. Kentucky's lost 10 in a row against the spread as a home favorite. So when they've got some expectations there at Kroger Field, they tend to fall short. You know, if this was a Toledo team from 2 years ago and this was the number, I think we'd see this one moving down probably into the 10 range. But because we've got a little bit of apprehension about Toledo going into this season, it's come down a little bit, but it's not like we've gone through 11, which is not necessarily a key number. But as far as double digits go, one of the more important numbers out there. Brian, one more game I want to tackle with you here. This is one of those games that you mentioned earlier, the MAC versus Sun Belt game, where you've got Eastern Michigan, a team that's played a ton of close games the last couple of years. This number was somewhere in the 4.5-5 range sometime last week, but now it's all the way up to 6, with Eastern Michigan getting some love down in the Myrtle Beach area against Coastal Carolina.
This was one of the games that I had circled when the schedule came out. I couldn't believe that Eastern Michigan was a favorite of this size on the road. My power rating numbers, I've got Eastern Michigan 57, I got Coastal 52. So with the home field advantage and all, Eastern should only be about a 2-point advantage in this game, maybe 3 points. So that's one of the teams I'm looking at. From a talent standpoint, Eastern Michigan, I've got 124, Coastal 127. So they're on the same level. I would prefer if Coastal had a game under their belt before this matchup, but that's the only side I would look at in this game. Eastern Michigan is one of those teams that performed very well a few years ago, and a lot of people were making money off of Eastern Michigan. I don't think it's the same team. I like the offensive and defensive coordinators. Not a big fan of the head coach, whereas in Coastal, not a big fan of the defensive coordinator, but I do like their offense and their head coach. So that's one of the games I'm looking at for my card this week. If I have anything to do in the MAC, that's probably the one game I'm taking a look at. Don't know if I'll get there yet, but yeah, that was one that surprised me early, and I kept waiting for the line to move, and it's going up. So I'm going to wait. Maybe I can catch a 7 here with Coastal, and that will be on my card if I can catch that 7.
Yeah, my line's 4 for this game, so I agree with you. This number should definitely be a little bit lower. And let me ask you this again from sort of a mechanical standpoint. Again, Eastern Michigan up in Ypsilanti, going all the way down to Conway, South Carolina, will be hot, will be humid. One of those weather handicaps as well. So in that respect, Brian, do you kind of maybe follow that game a little bit more closely from a live in-game standpoint?
Yeah, definitely. In-game betting, I've done a lot more in-game, and I talked earlier about the in-game show I'll be doing on Sports Grid tonight, be on from 5 to 7 Pacific. But, yeah, in-game betting is I really think that's the way to go anymore, because you've got so many questions coming into these games, and you don't know what a team is going to do, especially the first week college football. If you see a team that's trying to run the football and they can't run against this opponent, it may be a little bit early for them to change their approach halfway through, especially if they got a coach that doesn't do very well on making adjustments. You can always go back and check third quarter scores and see how these teams do in the third quarter, which is, you know, we see this in the NBA all the time. The Golden State Warriors have got such a great coach. The third quarter, they've owned the third quarter, and everybody's caught up to it, so there's not as much value on it. But if you can get one of these teams that makes very good adjustments at halftime, you can ride this thing the entire college football season, because you're just, number one, there's not enough games for anybody to catch up to, and number two, people aren't looking at that. So it's something that you've only got to 12 games as opposed to 82 in the NBA. So live betting, I've become a big fan of live betting, and it's cut down on my enjoyment of watching the games, because you just can't sit there with a beer and watch the game and go out with your friends. But it's work, but it pays off. Live betting is the way to go. And a lot of people, you know, everybody looks at live betting a little bit differently. A lot of people look for a regression to what the line is. But you've got a lot more information now than what you did when that line was out. So you can take advantage of people looking for that regression. And just, you know, sometimes the teams hasn't – you could tell when a team hasn't practiced fully, they've looked past that game. A lot of times we tend to say, well, maybe they'll look past this. Well, we don't know. We're not there at practices. We don't know what's going on. But once you start that game and you realize that team is just not prepared, you don't want to go against the – you don't want to take the regression. You basically want to continue to play on. The team is playing well, and it's worked out really well for me.
Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. What all you got going on over there right now, man?
Yeah, it's been, like I said, I've been red hot in baseball. I'm up over 166 units in baseball the last 2 years. I believe I'm at 50 units or whatever this month. It's just been a terrific week. We've got a big 5% play over there for a baseball game today. Comes with 150% guarantee. This game does not win. You get 150% of the money that you paid for the play back into your betting account. And I'm not starting to put up football today. I've already got one up for the opening game in the NFL for next week on the Thursday. I've had that up for about a week now, and I'm starting to put up more plays today as we go. This week is a little bit different than normal. Normally, I'll be putting up plays on Sunday night when the lines come out, so we can take advantage of that. But these lines have been out since April, so they're pretty solid at this point. So there's not as many line moves as what you would normally see in a weekend.
Brian Leonard, once again, you can find his work over at WagerTalk.com and on Twitter at BLeonardSports. Brian, appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. I like your soundings you've got over there at the website. The guys you've been putting on the podcast. I listen to it every day, and I recommend everybody else to do so.
Thank you very much, Brian Leonard, once again from WagerTalk.com, again at BLeonardSports on Twitter. Well, as you know, I've sounded a little bit different here over the last three shows, heading home from Las Vegas today. But for those that may be coming into town to sign up for the Westgate Super Contest, Circa Million, Golden Nugget, William Hill, Maddie and Tony over at FootballContest.com are our preferred proxies here on Bang the Book Radio. They've been great for us over the last several years. I'm sure they'll be great for you as well. Had a chance to catch up with both Maddie and Tony here over the last couple of days. So good to see them. Good to get involved in these contests. And once again, if you live outside of the state of Nevada, yes, you can participate in the contests, but you also need a proxy to put in your picks for you. Nobody better out there than Maddie and Tony at footballcontest.com. We got one more guest here for this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is VSiN host Wes Reynolds, whose work you can find on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you, sir?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always, man. And look, your hometown team, you know, some pretty big news about them over the weekend with Andrew Luck announcing his retirement. What's your take on the whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's on the surface, I think it was kind of shocking. But, I mean, I'm not buying that he just kind of impulsively made this decision. I think this is – he may have just decided within that short time frame, but – I think he was thinking about this for at least a couple to a few months that this was a possibility here. But, I mean, I'm never going to really get on a guy or get after a guy for retiring early rather than retiring late in professional football. I mean, it is a tough physical game. And, I mean, some guys have different thresholds, and I think he kind of reached his at this point and decided to step away from the game. I hope he kind of finds what he's looking for and is able to lead a productive life, certainly post-football, and I'm sure he will. But, I mean, going forward, I think the Colts maybe aren't as in bad of shape as people would think. I think that, look, you have to downgrade a little bit from Luck to Brissett, clearly, and all of the different betting markets than they clearly have, but I don't think that this is 2017. This is 2019, and this roster is a lot better than it was in 2017. You have a more experienced GM now in his third year who's done a pretty good job in his short time as an executive with the Colts, that being Chris Ballard. You have a better coach in Frank Reich, a better coaching staff, and you have more talent up and down the roster. So I'm not selling the Colts, I think, like everybody else. In fact, I'm trying to buy them at a better price. And at 5-1 to win the division, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad bet in a division that's pretty well balanced and has its fair share of parity.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, I think at this point, the value is playing over, is playing some future stuff with the Colts. And you know, one of the things too here about Frank Reich, and we just spent a lot of time talking about coaching in the college football ranks, I think it's important to look at it in the NFL too. You know, what makes a good coach is a guy that's willing to adapt to the personnel that he has instead of force feeding his vision, his philosophy on personnel that maybe doesn't fit for it. And the nice thing here is that, I mean, look, Jacoby Brissett doesn't have the arm talent of Andrew Luck, but he's also probably a more mobile guy at this stage of the two of their careers. And I don't think a whole lot changes. Brissett's been getting, you know, most of the first team reps, if not all of them here in training camp in the lead up to the season. And I trust a guy like Frank Reich to, you know, navigate the playbook properly for a guy like Brissett. And that means a lot here. There are some head coaches, if they lost their quarterbacks, they'd be screwed. Those teams would be dead in the water. I don't think that's the case with Reich at all.
Right. And people, if you recall back to 2017, when the Colts first got Jacoby Brissett, they had to make a trade. I believe it was on September 2nd of that year. That was like a week and a half before the regular season started. And Brissett actually was not the starter after they got him in the trade. He started 15 games of the 16 games that year. That starter, the opening game they played at the Los Angeles Rams, the starter was Scott Tolzien. and it turned out to be a disaster. And then they went to Brissett for the rest of the season. And you also got to remember that Brissett was just learning a brand new offense. He had had like essentially a week and a half to learn a new offense. This guy, at least as a backup, has been in this system, has been in this offense for all the last season, and then, of course, all off season this season. So, I just think that you're starting off at a much better base point than you were back in 2017. And you've got a guy that I think is not a total greenhorn that you're just throwing out there to the wolves like you did 2 years ago.
Well, I think, too, you know, we have to put this in the proper context. I mean, yeah, you only play six of your 16 games against division opponents, but when you look at the AFC South, I mean, yeah, Deshaun Watson's a very, very talented player. We'll see if he's able to stay healthy. He does have a good supporting cast, but now, of course, the Texans already down Lamar Miller. Nick Foles, not a ton of reps in the preseason. New team for him there with Doug Marrone. They've got some injuries at the skill positions already. And Marcus Mariota just never really lived up to the expectations that were placed on him with being such a high draft pick. So, I mean, it's not like it's out of the realm of possibility to say that Brissett is, you know, already the second best quarterback in this division, just simply by virtue of being in the system. I mean, Foles does have a higher ceiling than Brissett does, but it's not like this guy is like awful. It's not like he's the fourth best quarterback in the division where he could be in some of the other divisions. So I think that has to be applied to this year too, where he's in a pretty good situation with a great defense, good talent around him. He's been in the system. There's probably more stability here with the Colts than we think.
Yeah, and you just said it, Adam. I mean, every single team in the AFC South has some kind of issues that they're trying to work through. And you mentioned Watson, who is the best quarterback in the division and put up pretty darn good numbers last year, despite the fact that he was sacked 62 times, the most in the NFL for any starting quarterback. But that's the issue. And I know Houston went and tried to get a couple guys in the draft, but I'm not convinced that they've necessarily fixed their offensive line. So that's an issue. With Jacksonville on the offense, they can only go but up. They averaged only 15 points, a paltry 15 points a game last year. But they get Nick Foles back with John DeFilippo, who was his quarterback coach in Philadelphia during the year that they won the Super Bowl. But that's still a new system and a new offense. And then I want to see if this Jacksonville team can get over last year, where they have talent, especially up and down that defense. They've had injury issues on offense with Fournette and Marquise Lee, so maybe they don't have as many offensive weapons as you would think. But this was a team that got some adversity last year, and then the finger-pointing started happening, and the fact that I felt that this team packed it in when times got tough last year. And if you have that in your character, or you have that in your mindset, you're willing to do that once, sometimes you're willing to fall back on that again. And then you look at Tennessee, you've got Marcus Mariota in a contract year, now starting to have to work with his fourth offensive coordinator in 5 years. And while we don't want to overestimate what we see in the preseason, if you watch that game on Sunday night with Tennessee against Pittsburgh, they have some offensive line issues because Pittsburgh's front seven absolutely dominated them and got in that backfield and got to that quarterback a lot. And it wasn't just piling up stats with the number two and three and four units down the roster. It was the first unit that really struggled for Tennessee. And then plus they haven't had, other than Derrick Henry, consistent playmaking out of that offense. So everybody's got issues here. I mean, it's not like, well, all of a sudden, I mean, I know the Colts had to take a drop, maybe from the favorite role, but it's not like all of a sudden the Patriots and the Chiefs and the Rams got put in the AFC South.
Now, as we look at futures across the board the rest of the way in the AFC, you know, we talked with Brent from DSI Sportsbook last week. He mentioned that there was some pretty decent investment on the Colts to win the Super Bowl, and, you know, obviously the odds much better now. Still not sure it's a bet I'd love to make, but hey, if you like them to win the division, maybe not a bad idea to take a long shot on a Super Bowl as well, since if they win the division, they would get a home playoff game. But obviously this kind of changes the complexion of the AFC in general. So Do you find that maybe there's a team outside of the AFC South that benefited from this Luck announcement?
Yeah, I mean, I know, and I know that they cut the odds on the favorites, which I expected that they were going to do. They cut the odds on the Patriots and on the Chiefs, and there's a lot to like about the Patriots and the fact that they play one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. But the team I like in the AFC is still the team that I've liked in the AFC, and this may hurt your Cleveland heart, but I like the Pittsburgh Steelers a lot. I think that there's value on this team. I like the fact that they're kind of not being talked about as much, and maybe that puts a chip on their shoulder, and the fact that everybody is kind of putting the Cleveland Browns on that level. And look, I think the future of the Browns is very bright, but it may not be this year. It may be a year or two down the line where it's really bright, where you're really saying, yeah, this is a team that can go to and win the Super Bowl. It just it hasn't been proven yet. You've got not only a new head coach, but new offensive coordinators and new defensive coordinators across the board. So, I mean, that's a big transition for Cleveland. And I like the Steelers in the fact that I do believe in the theory of addition by subtraction. Losing A.B. and losing Le'Veon Bell are two very talented players. But James Conner proved that he could do the job last year in place of Le'Veon Bell and did it all last year. Juju Smith-Schuster, I think, is ready to be a number one receiver. That team has some good talent, some good depth at wide receiver, a very good offensive line, a really good pass rush on defense. Kind of getting back to what we know the Pittsburgh Steelers to be, and getting back to Pittsburgh Steeler football, which is kind of the knock you on your asses, get to your quarterback, be physical. And I think with removing a couple egos and removing a couple forces of drama from that team allows maybe Mike Tomlin, who I think the last couple of years has not done a very good job leading and controlling this team, but it allows him to get control of his team, or at least the opportunity to do so, by eliminating those guys and focusing on what they have. And look, Ben Roethlisberger had the most attempts in the league last year, and they said some offensive records really for the franchise. I don't think offense was a real problem. I think maybe some youth on defense and the injuries were a problem, and then all the distractions surrounding the team. The Steelers are the team that I think people are sleeping on definitely in the AFC.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they may take my Cleveland card away from me, but man, Pittsburgh to me is the team I like in the AFC North, a team I would consider from a future standpoint for the Super Bowl. And look, I mean, it was partially the sacks. It was partially the pass rush. They were tied for the league lead in sacks, but still they had the fifth best yards per play against last year on defense. And they're able to make those third and longs. They're able to get those, you know, those big negative plays on defense. And that's a very important thing in today's NFL. So I think Pittsburgh does have a lot of positive attributes on defense and, you know, certainly still some good personnel on offense. But speaking of Pittsburgh, they're a 3.5, 4-point favorite here this week against Carolina. We've got week four of the preseason. Everybody plays on Thursday night. Any week four thoughts, betting angles, philosophies that you have, Wes, that, you know, may get you some skin in the game here tomorrow night?
Yeah, you know, this is really a week where you've got to do a lot of reading, because the preseason, I think the angles are there and the angles are legitimate where you can really make money. I was at a seminar last night, actually, over at the Sunset Station book out near Henderson that your friend and mine, Brian Blessing, was one of the MCs of. And there was a gentleman on the panel, Bruce Marshall, who, of course, people know is the publisher and writer and editor for the Gold Sheet publication. And he brought up that very point in terms of you have to treat the preseason really as an entirely different season than the NFL. Yeah, this isn't going to matter in your handicapping going forward, probably in the regular season. You're not going to take too much of it, but you have to treat it as its own, I think, entity. And there is value to be had. And one thing that he mentioned that I bet, and I usually don't bet a ton of week four preseason just because, look, there none of the starters really are playing, or very few of them. And even in week three, which everybody used to call the dress rehearsal week, you saw, I think, the least amount of reps for first team quarterbacks and first team offenses that you ever had before, simply because they have these organized practices now in training camp, and they've had them in the past, but they're using them even more in the fact that you get another team to come in for basically a full week before that second preseason game. So you kind of see what you see in these practices, where you don't necessarily have to put first team guys out there to get a bunch of reps or play them into the third quarter in that third preseason game. So it's been a little bit of a different adjustment from that standpoint. But one situation, I guess, tomorrow, Buffalo looks like they're going to play Tyree Jackson for almost the whole game tomorrow. And you've seen a little bit of movement already. But, the Minnesota Vikings is a team I would go with. I mean, certain teams in the preseason just get it done, and certain coaches really try to win this game. And just to list a few of them, Minnesota with Mike Zimmer, they really try to win these games. Seattle with Pete Carroll, he usually tries to win these games. Obviously, the big one being John Harbaugh. And you look at that line, and that line's cut all the way up to 6. I think open 3.5 or 4 some places. But, the word is out on the fact that John Harbaugh, they have this incredible streak in the preseason. And then, on the contrary, the word is out on Dan Quinn in Atlanta that they're terrible in the preseason and they don't hardly ever cover a game. Jacksonville, who has not been good so far in the preseason, actually taking money against the Falcons. So, I mean, that's kind of what you play against. And then one that I noticed was Indianapolis at Cincinnati. That total has gone down to 33.5. And look, the totals are going to be lower this week because you're getting a lot more second unit guys playing in these games. But that total, it's like it's been adjusted with Andrew Luck, who wouldn't have played anyway in a preseason game. It's like the whole offense gets adjusted downward in a preseason game. And look, Brissett's not going to play either. But you looked at the Colts and the Bears last week, and that easily went over after the under got compressed really low. So I would potentially look at an over. I think you're seeing 33.5. I'm not sure if there are any 33s out there, but Colts Bengals over, I think, kind of makes sense. Just kind of reacting to the overreaction and that total adjustment downward.
Well, and that's one too. I mean, look, we know Jacoby Brissett's the starter. We know he's not going to play, but now you're kind of looking at that backup role. And if you're Frank Reich, that means reps. That means the 2 and 3 guys playing, dropping back, throwing the ball around. And for Cincinnati with a guy like Zach Taylor, he's a quarterback guy at his core. So why wouldn't he take an extended look at some of the guys that he has, especially with Andy Dalton, probably being gone after this year. So that's one where I would probably expect a fair amount of passes in that one. I think also, too, there's kind of this insinuation that in week 4 of the preseason, these teams are just going to run the football and get the hell out of there and try not to get anybody hurt. But I think a lot of these teams with the second and third string quarterbacks, they're going to go through the playbook as if, obviously it'd be a little bit more vanilla so they don't show anything on film, but they're largely going to go through, balanced offenses and throwing the football around. It's not like everyone's going to go out there and run the ball 40 times and try to get out of there. So I think that's kind of in play here too, where you're going to have young players on defense making mistakes and coaches that probably want to evaluate, their backup and third string quarterback situations.
Exactly. And it's the same way going through just the preseason in general, where it's like, oh, well, the scoring is going to be lower because we got second and third string offenses. You've also got second and third string defensive players who are going to make mistakes. You've got second and third string offensive linemen who are going to maybe miss blocks, miss assignments, and get beat. But what that allows, especially if you're a team that, and we've talked about this before, if you're a team that has a mobile quarterback that can make plays out of the pocket, and the Colts actually, a perfect example with Chad Kelly, who has been pretty darn productive here in the preseason, threw a pick 6 last week that really wasn't his fault. It was kind of the receiver running a wrong route. But, guys that are going to get out of the pocket, be able to break some of these long runs and be able to make plays, and that's what you look at, and that leads to kind of some more overs where guys got to go back to their college instincts and not just stay and be a pocket passer where it's almost a little bit of a spread offense where they got to get out in space. So that's what you see here, and that's why I think sometimes these totals get declined, I guess, a little bit lower and maybe even too low in many cases.
So I want to transition over to college football to finish out the segment here for a few minutes. I know that you used to be a very high-volume guy, posting a lot of stuff on Twitter, now wearing a couple of different hats over at VSiN and, you know, being out here in town and everything. I imagine your volume has been cut a decent amount here, but I wanted to ask you about these non-conference games in college football. You know, I had this discussion a little bit to a degree with Brian in the previous segment. I could see both schools of thought. You know, I could see the big favorite in the first half wants to get out there, get the big lead, put it in cruise control, worry about next week. I could also see it may take time for the better team to be the better team, but over 60 minutes, over an increased sample size of plays, they should be the better team on each individual play, which therefore leads to the opportunity of covering these big numbers. So there have to be derivative opportunities available in these non-conference games with the big spreads, right?
Right. And I mean, what I look at in terms of my volume going down lower, especially my pregame position and pre-flop positions, I think have gone down a little bit more. A couple reasons I will say that for week one college football, not that I won't have quite a few plays, but it won't be like insanity. One of the reasons is because, look, these lines have been out 6 to 8 weeks. A lot of these numbers have really moved. So you don't want to get it to the portion where you only have like a usual 5 or 6 days for a college football market to change and mature or what have you, and you can still get some decent numbers even if you miss the first number. It's very hard to do that here in the first week. So that's where a lot of this live betting and in-game wagering is really going to come into play, where you make notes of, hey, here's what I like, but I missed this number, but maybe I can get this number or better if my read is right and I've done my homework and my research is right, that I can get the number I want. So that's something I'm going to use not only every week, but especially week one here. You want to use that. But yeah, I do think the derivatives, when you look at some of these big favorites, because I think the temptation is to lay all these big favorites, but in a full game, it's kind of hard to do, and these are some big numbers to cover. I mean, I'll just use an example, and this isn't a game I've bet or played yet, but Georgia Tech Clemson tomorrow. Clemson 37 points. I have no idea what Georgia Tech is going to look like because they have a new coach with Jeff Collins coming from Temple. They have a totally new offense. The triple option in Paul Johnson is gone. So you want to see how this team is going to look a little bit. So on the surface, yeah, can Clemson name the score here? Sure. But Clemson also first game at home after being an undefeated national champion. I don't know what ceremonies are planned officially, but that's that old quote-unquote ring and banner night thing where you get a team and they're home and they're happy and sometimes they'll give a little bit of a flat performance. And then also you got to look at the schedule dynamics, even this early in the season. Clemson probably has their two toughest challenges in weeks two and three. They get a Texas A&M team coming in that's probably going to be in the top 10 that gave them all they wanted last year at College Station, and Clemson got out of there with a two-point win. And then Clemson's got to go to Syracuse, who probably, if there's a team – that I guess had Clemson's number, it's really Syracuse, who beat them 2 years ago when they were number two in the country, Clemson being. And then Syracuse barely lost last year in Death Valley. So you got a Clemson bunch that you would think would be motivated for those two games. And it's like, how much are they really going to want to show in week one against a team that they absolutely lay over talent-wise and scheme-wise and what have you? So yeah, you've got to look at those derivatives. You got to look at those quarter bets and maybe first half bets. And then if you didn't play anything pre-flop, look at the half times. I mean, that's what you really have to do instead of just simply taking side and total before the game and then judging your handicapping on the base of that. I mean, these guys have to put a full menu out there. So be willing to try the full menu instead of getting the same thing that you get every single time.
Well, and one last other quick point here regarding live betting opportunities. I mean, look, here in these games, first of all, we haven't seen any of these teams at all unless you've watched spring games or something like that, and things would have changed over the last 4 months. But also, you know, you may get an underdog that has a gadget play that goes for 75 yards for a touchdown, or you may have, you know, that favorite run the kickback. We don't even get to see their offense, but they're up 7-0 because they house the opening kickoff. You're going to get a better number all of a sudden. You know, whether you want to play a dog or a favorite, you're going to get a better number probably very early in a lot of these games from a live betting standpoint. And as you just mentioned, these numbers have been out forever. The market has kind of hammered itself into a certain level of efficiency, and that goes away when you start the game and you get some of these weird live betting quirks or something like that. So that's something else for our listeners to keep in mind here, and I know that you know this, Wes, but you know, early on in these games, some fluky thing is going to change the in-play number, and you may wind up getting a little bit of line equity that way.
Yeah, and you can also apply this to the NFL as well as college football. I mean, how did they score? You know, if you see a team and all of a sudden you see 7-0 on the board, minute and a half into the game or something. Well, how did they score? Was it a fluky play, like you were saying, or was it especially in the NFL, was it a long pass interference that got them down there? I mean, those are things that you got to take into account because just the points and just the numbers and the math aren't always exactly the same. You have to look at that, but you have to kind of commingle that with the situation of how the score happened. You know, let's say if you get 7-7 and it's 5 or 6 minutes into the game, well, the natural proclivity is to bet the over because recency bias affects live wagering too. And we talk about recency bias all the time in these segments, and people are more equipped or apt to bet what they saw last. So what you want to do is kind of take that into account and be willing. I think in live betting, and I was talking to a couple guys this week on VSiN about this, live betting is kind of the ultimate spot to be contrarian. And that's the spot, I think, if you're going to be successful in in-game wagering, you have to be willing to be more contrarian, maybe than you would be if you're doing pre-flop, pre-game type of betting. So that's where I think it lines up here. And you got to be willing to go against the grain when you're doing some in-running wagering.
Wes Reynolds is working and fine on Twitter at Wes Reynolds, the number one, again, regular contributor to the Point Spread Weekly over at VSiN as well as on air. Wes, any idea when your next segment is or when you got anything else coming up?
Well, Thursday and Friday, we have a show called The Green Zone. I'm all Sean. I split shifts, so I will be 8 to 10 on Friday nights and Thursday nights, and that's Pacific time. And then on Saturday, myself and Brady Cannon, Saturday and Sunday for 4 hours apiece, 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific on Sunday. So we're during a lot of these games, Adam, and we've kind of had some dry runs really during August where we've had a little mixture of baseball and football and what have you. Well, now we're going to have all these games and a full slate of college football, and then the next week a full slate of pro football. So this is going to get a lot of fun. It's an interactive show where we do a lot of updates, where we talk a lot of in-running wagering, and things are happening where all of a sudden we're in a conversation, and then we just got to stop and flip a script just on a dime. So that makes it challenging, but it makes it a really fun broadcast too.
Yeah, it definitely does. Make sure you check those out with Wes Reynolds. Again, at Wes Reynolds is the number one on Twitter. Wes, appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, thanks for having me. Safe travels, my friend.
Thank you very much, buddy. There you go. There's Wes Reynolds again, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter, regular contributor to VSiN, both the Point Spread Weekly and also on air. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, I'll sound the way I usually do here as we chat with Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com and also Thor Nystrom from Roto World. A great segment with Thor last week. Very happy to have him on the program each week now. So please make sure you check out both of those segments. And then Friday, we'll chat UFC with Christian Pina and then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.